Accession number 26752, Reel 4.
High now, and it, I wanted to because it was cooked yesterday.
And this is Anke Bergman, and it's Reel 4. Yes, it was very interesting you saying, Anke, that you actually walk through the town and the townspeople would see the state you were in.
Yes, and if they didn't look at us or didn't take any notice, that was fine, but sometimes they sort of made remarks or whatever. I didn't like it. No, nobody liked it, but we looked aside. But they must have thought, well, they didn't know. I would say they didn't know. Because there was nothing near Dresden which would sort of point to that way. And I mean, what we had on, you just can't imagine the rags we were in. It was terrible. And no stockings and no. I mean, it's cold in Germany in winter.
Well, were you very worried about your baby? You know, given the food you were getting and the conditions, did you have confidence that all would be well? That you would
I had confidence all would be well, and I was so stupid again, because on New Year's Eve 44. We were transporting a workbench, you know, these two planks with on the metal sort of props or something. I don't know what. Can you imagine what I'm talking about? And we were taking it from here to there, and it fell on me. And it didn't break my leg, but I still have a scar. But that's neither here nor there, but that was end of 44, the last day of 44, and I kept on thinking, God, I fell over and this thing fell over me, but it hit my leg and that was that. But as it bled and wouldn't heal, and so I was put in the sort of, not hospital, but the place which was allocated to the nurse and if somebody was ill or something. Which was actually very good because the nurse was very understanding and I stayed there for weeks, not needing to. But there I didn't have to walk through the town and we had perhaps more to eat or something. And I could lie down all day long and not work, which was marvelous. But I got very friendly with her and she was one of the prisoners as well, but a nurse. And I discussed with her once what went through my mind. It's stupid. I told her, but all right, so now I am nearing the end of the pregnancy. What will happen when the child is born and they will take it away from me and put it in a German family to be brought up as a German? How will I find it after the war? I see hear myself saying it. And she said, well, not to worry, because she thought I was totally mad because they would have killed the baby or killed me and both of us. I don't know. But my optimistic nature, how will I find the child if they gave it to some Germans? That occupied my mind, I mean. No, it didn't come to it. But still, it was a possibility, because how did I know when the war will end?
Yes, that must have been a worry in itself, although, as you say, it was an optimistic view that you would live, the child
would live, and I will only have to look for her.
But it could also have been pretty awful, couldn't it, if that had happened? So I suppose it was.
Yes, but as I had one child in Terezin and survived it sort of without any problem, anyway, this is just to lighten the tone of.
Was the birth straightforward in Terezin when you had your little boy? Was it a straightforward birth?
Absolutely. I mean, it would hurt and all that, but every birth. Have you got children? How many?
I've got three.
How nice. Well, so you know what I'm talking about. Even the easiest birth is. So I had a normal birth, nothing.
And presumably in Terezin there would have been a lot of You have said a lot of medical
Medically, I couldn't have been in better hands. But they didn't have the medicines which might have been needed, but I didn't.
You were facing a very different situation now, weren't you, with your second child?
But I didn't realise it, or didn't want to realise it, or whatever. Well, anyway, that was my conversation with the nurse, and she must have thought I was totally mad, but she was very kind, and we discussed it, how I will look for the child when it's all right. So then came the beginning of April, and Roosevelt died on the 4th of April, I think. We were still in the factory, but not working. Oh, in Freiburg, but the factory was abandoned by then. We were in our barracks. And then straight after Roosevelt's death, we evacuated from there, and we were put in coal wagons where there was still the soot and everything, and no roof, no ceiling. And it was raining, and that was really apocalyptic, these wagons and all that. And we were sent off, or sort of went off, and we crossed the Czech frontier, which we noticed, and we had hoped they would send us back to Terezin, because that was about 50 miles away from there, or 80 miles, not more than that. But we turned southward. Before that, we stood on one siding for about a fortnight. No facilities to wash, no facilities for anything else, no food. We were dirty, smudged with all that soot. No, it was a catastrophe. Really raining, and the muck, you know, and the soot clings to you, and you have nothing to wash it off. No, it was dreadful. And then after they started moving again, but southward, not eastward, which would have been to Terezin. And we were slowly going south in Bohemia, and we stopped somewhere for some reason, I don't know what, and I stood at the door, open door, this skeleton, pregnant skeleton, and a Czech farmer or somebody was passing by and offered me a glass of milk, like that. And next to me was our SS man with a whip, and he lifted that. He didn't hit me, I must say. But he lifted it as if he was going to hit me, because the Czech farmer tried to do good to me. And I have never seen a face of, like the Czech farmer. I thought he would die there when he saw this happening in front. But he managed to give me the glass of milk, and I don't touch milk. Ever before and ever after. But this was the most marvelous thing I have ever drank in my life. But that face of that poor man, seeing this skeleton and that young man with a whip sort of on top of me. He didn't hit me, I must stress it. But why make this gesture also? And we carried on until we came to the other frontier between Bohemia and Austria, and then we knew we can really go nowhere else but Mauthausen, which was very near the front. But one still didn't know for sure. And when we arrived and saw that name, Mauthausen, I started to have the baby, and I was put on some cart with some other people, because the camp was on top of a little, or not so little, hill. And so we came up to the camp proper. I had better stop and have a look. I'll be back in a minute. I'm sorry to trouble you with that, but I don't want to burn.
So, Anka, this is a continuation, isn't it, of Reel 4? And you're going to tell me now about you've arrived at Mauthausen. And
we arrived in the camp.
The birth of the baby, yes.
Yes, but what I have to say is that I had to change in the middle of my giving birth from one cart to another cart to be going down again, because they took me to the camp hospital, which is called Revere for some reason. Every camp had a hospital, Revere. And that was, again, going down the hill, which we came up 5 minutes before. But anyway.
So you had to walk there, or did they carry
you? No, I had to climb down from the one. Nobody helped me. And I had to climb up on the other. And there was a Russian doctor prisoner who was with us somewhere. And I begged her to help me. Oh, went off. Doctor.
What stage of the birth were you then? You know, had your waters broken?
No, it must have. I don't remember. And then we went down the hill, and I kept on having these birth pangs or whatever, but not very bad. And I must have started. There were other people on this cart, about 20 women who were in the last stages of typhoid fever or something, and lice running through like, no, you can't imagine the circumstances we were in. And the baby came through, and I really didn't feel like anything, and the baby didn't cry and didn't move and didn't anything. And for another 5 minutes we were going down, and nobody helped her and nobody helped me and nobody. And we arrived in that Revere, you know, that hospital. And they called a doctor. Then there were many doctors again there who happened to be a gynecologist from Belgrade. And so he smacked the child's bottom, and it started crying, and he told me, "I've got a little boy." I was delighted. And then the placenta came out, and everything was fine, and I was given my own bunk, which was a miracle, I mean, and all that. And the baby was wrapped in paper, because there was nothing else there. And I was as happy as a lark, I must say. I had a little boy, and he was breathing, and everything was fine, and life was marvelous. No, that I didn't think. And the Germans blew the gas chamber the day before, so we couldn't, but we didn't know that. And they changed sort of from the murderers to very, very good-hearted people who wanted the best for us, and they brought me food. After 3 weeks having a piece of bread here and a piece of bread there, they brought me some macaroni or spaghetti with an awful lot of fat on it. And to see that much food, I mean, I grabbed it, of course, but that could have killed me. But it didn't. And I had so much milk for my baby that I could have fed 5 babies. Where did it come? I don't know. From? I don't know. And, well, that was that. After 3 days or 4 days, the Americans liberated us. The Germans had gone. And there was a little nurse running around us, and I begged her to give my little boy a bath, because nobody looked at him, I don't know for how long. And she said, "What do you mean, little boy? It's a little girl." And then I thought, then I got hysterical, because, I mean, this is a bit too much. And I was told, if it's true or not, that it can happen, that it was such a small baby, under 3 pounds, and that in case of these very small babies, either the sexual organs are too small or too big. If it's true or not, I don't know. But she is a little girl with her 2 sons and all that. So that was all no. But I couldn't have known that then. But I was delighted it was a little girl. I would have taken the boy, but I wanted a little girl.
No, was she in this paper all the time? You know, those 3 days?
But there was nothing else.
And did she, you know, was she good? Did she cry?
She was like an angel. And I kept on warming her feet. I remember that, because I thought I must warm her feet and she must be warm. And she had enough to eat, so that was taken care of, because I had milk galore.
And I suppose mother's milk as well.
Well, that's right. However thin it down it was, I don't know. But, well, anyway, that was that, and the Germans had gone, and that was marvelous. And we stayed there for another fortnight because there was a revolution in Prague at that time. End of the war. And then, after about a fortnight, they sent us back to Czechoslovakia. We went in coaches from Mauthausen to Budweis, which is the nearest Czech place where they sort of unloaded us from the coaches and put us on a train. But before they did it, so the people saw us dismounting of that coach and saw the baby, and within half an hour I had so many clothes and nappies and whatever that again I could have given it to I don't know how many babies. That was unbelievable. So she came to Prague beautifully sort of equipped. But then we went by train to Prague, and the worst moment of the war was about to arrive. We arrived at the main station in Prague. It was in the evening, it was dark, no electricity, nobody waiting for us, nobody anywhere. And then we knew what hit us, because all through these 3.5 years, you had to keep sort of fighting it, not to worry, not to think who died, who didn't die, how they died. You went back home, and there wasn't any home. You realized, you knew it somewhere in your subconscious, but you realized there is nobody here, and there is nothing. And what do you do now? But anyway, some people disappeared somewhere, and the ones who didn't have anywhere to go were put up in a hotel near the station. Well, we arrived with my daughter with all the equipment which I got for her, and we stayed the night. And in the morning, I came downstairs with her and said, if somebody could give me money for the tram, because I didn't have any money. So I came with money for the tram, because I was going to a cousin of mine whom I thought and hoped that she would be still in Prague, that she would be in Prague, because she was in a mixed marriage, Jewish, non-Jewish, and they weren't divorced, and that was quite something, really, and the Germans somehow treated these people better than us for some reason. I don't know why. Well, anyway, so I said, they must be there, and they will be there, and they were there. And they opened the door to us as if we were the queen, and I don't know what, and they treated us like their own. And I begged them if I could stay for 3 days or something before I knew where I was or what was happening. And I stayed 3.5 years with them. Her husband was a high employee of the state, a civil servant, and they had a daughter of 17 and a son of 21, and they accepted us as I was the older sister. They treated us just unbelievably. That's what I wanted to say before, and then I said I was coming to it before I went back to the place where I used to, where I came from. But they were marvelous to us, a small flat and the two growing up children. They made room for us. It was unbelievable. And this cousin was 22 years older than I, so I really hardly knew her. Because my mother came from a family of 12 children at that time. And my mother was the youngest, her mother was the oldest, so there was an enormous difference. And I knew her, of course, but slightly. I mean, we didn't have anything much in common. Well, they were fabulous. And then the summer came, and I thought I had better go and see in that little place I come from what's going there, because they wanted to go somewhere on holidays from Prague, and I wasn't going to impose on them. And I went to Třebechovice. And the people there, I told you, behaved so dreadfully to me. And I stayed there, and these were this really hurt, because from the Germans you took it as a fact and didn't give it another thought. That was the idea. But I didn't expect that from the Czechs, where I grew up and went to school and all that. It was awful. It was so inhuman somehow. Horrible. And
have
one,
they taken your property? Have they taken
They have taken everything, but they had to allocate me somewhere to live, because I was, after all, from that place. So they allocated me a room in my sister's house with no facilities. I don't know how we managed the 2 months we were there. It was dreadful. And by then, during this time, my second husband, which I didn't know he was going to be my second husband, but I knew him all my life, and he came home to demobilize from the Air Force in Prague. And he brought me a case full of things from my brother-in-law, whom I told you he went to England and wanted his wife to come with, to follow him, and she didn't. But he happened to meet my future husband somewhere, and they lived together. And of course, he knew his name from me, because I used to see him now and then.
End of reel four, Anke Bergman.